What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. We have a Monday rundown here for you, more of a Monday rundown on Will Smith, our everybody's favorite guest's life. And following that, Sean and I talked a little golf, so follow us on Twitter at Sorry Sports and enjoy the pod.
We're here on a Monday, and we are very lucky to bring back, once again, friend of the pod, Mr. Will Smith. We're back, baby. How are you?
What's up, guys? Happy to be back.
It's good to have you, brother. I haven't heard from you in a while. I hope all is well.
All is good. Can't complain. A lot of crazy college basketball going on.
Yeah. You guys are going to fill me in on a little bit of what's going on, but, you know, I'm still there, too. Will, would you consider the Jayhawks reeling right now?
For sure. 100%.
And Sean is just on absolute cloud nine, as it seems like UConn kind of replaced Kansas as the dominant team, because Kansas won a national title and was pretty dominant early in the 20s. And now UConn's kind of stolen that spot, huh, boys?
I mean, UConn's been great for – they have those down years, but – then they win a national championship as an 8 seed out of nowhere. You know, they have those years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the trajectory was they were probably one of the best teams in the country perennially from the mid-90s kind of to the end of the 2000s and early 2010s, and then Calhoun left, Ollie comes in, they win a championship, and then they go to the American. You don't hear from them for a long time. They're playing East Carolina and SMU, and recruits are leaving early, and Ollie doesn't really have a pulse on the team. And then, you know, they get back into the Big East with Hurley, and they get off to a little bit of a slow start. They're dealing with COVID, win a national championship last year. I mean, guys, honestly, this is – I can't believe that any college basketball team is playing this well. And Will, like, we really wanted to bring you on to talk about, you know, a whole litany of things, but – knowing how plugged in you are with college hoops, I mean, this year has been a really interesting season. And in the notes I put, it's Purdue and UConn, then everyone else, and then this weekend happened.
Yeah, so, I think I put UConn.
I think it's just UConn by themselves. And, like, you know, going back to your national championship last year, that might be, from what I can recall, one of the most dominant runs I've ever seen to win a national championship. The only game they were losing was Iona at halftime. That's the only game they were losing.
That's like Rick for you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
We're going to talk about him.
Of course we are. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even put Purdue close to them. I could see Purdue losing in the first or second round. Honestly, I put it right now, the way UConn's playing, I think it's a disappointment if they don't win at all. I know that the tournament is a crapshoot, but I think you would be disappointed if they don't at least make it to the Elite Eight.
Oh, for sure. I mean, guys, they set an all-time record for most consecutive non-conference wins by double digits, going from last year, counting the tournament. They didn't lose an out-of-conference game last year, and they picked it up until, Will, your Jayhawks knocked UConn off this year at Allen Fieldhouse. So it's been a crazy year and a half, honestly, to watch them. And when you go to the tournament and you're playing out-of-conference teams in different styles, it's kind of weird with this UConn team. I feel good about them kind of beating anybody that's not a Big East team.
No, I totally agree. I think they match up well with anybody they can play. They have the big guys that they can match up with Purdue if they play them. They have the speed to play with Kansas. You were missing one of your best players when you played us. And granted, it was in Fog Allen Fieldhouse where a lot of people don't win. So, you know, neutral court with all your healthy team, that's a game, you know?
Yeah, I think what was – did Kansas win – what was that, a four-point game, five-point game, something
I think
like
it was
that?
A five. I think it was a four or five-point game.
Yeah. Yeah, Castle was still out at the time. So we'll see. I mean, it really has been an interesting year. I mean, Will, kind of like – I don't really have much more to say on UConn, boys. I mean, I guess we're just kind of in holding pattern. I don't think they're going to go through the rest of the Big East unscathed. I could see them losing to Creighton tomorrow in Omaha. I mean, they've got Marquette again in Milwaukee. I could see them getting tripped up one time, but
I could see, to be honest with you, I could see you beating Creighton and then you slip up against Providence at Providence.
Yeah, the last game of the regular season.
You know,
yeah.
I like that Providence team. I think their center is going to be a lottery pick.
You love him, Tom. You were on that when they played 3 weeks ago.
Out of George Mason, that transfer? Dude, he's like, he looks like an NBA center already.
Yeah.
Dude can shoot.
Also, I think Castle's a lottery pick. I know he's hurt, but.
No, he's not hurt.
He's not hurt now.
Well, he was hurt. I know he was. Yeah, yeah. He was hurt, but he looks like he came back. I saw a nice windmill that he had in warm-ups a couple games ago, and then I never watched the game, so sorry about that.
You're good. I think that was the DePaul game. He actually, it was announced he just won Brady's Freshman of the Week for the 8th time this year. So it's kind of not the most loaded NBA draft, but there's some talent for sure. But to kind of go into Purdue, you know, when the first brackets were released on Saturday, Purdue was the number one overall. Obviously, that's going to be flipped. But Purdue is that team that you can really talk yourselves into, but they have had a really rough past couple of years in the tournament. So, like, Will, when you watch them, and Tom, I don't know how much of them you've seen, but what is their kryptonite? Why do they have these games like against the Northwestern where they lose, or a terrible loss at Ohio State, who just fired their coach? I mean, those kind of losses can't really happen with a potential number one overall seed.
Yeah. So the thing I think about Purdue is that, you know, it's a typical Big Ten team that likes to run the shot clock down, you know, take a good shot with 4 seconds left, get the ball to Edie in the post. If they play a team that likes to run and gun, like in Ohio State, like in Northwestern, where Zach Edey's stuck at midcourt because he can't get back, and then he can't go back, that's where they struggle. They have to play their game where they can drain the clock, hit a good shot, get it into Edey in the post, and easy 2 points. If they're running and gunning, Edey's stuck at half court the whole game.
I don't even know what to add to that. I think it was so perfectly said. I mean, the Big Ten basketball is kind of like Big Ten football.
Yeah, for sure. It's just defense.
Yeah, just like super, you know, the Midwest, just grind it down. The coast, you know, we don't really like that brand of sport, but they're just, yeah, like exactly like Will said, when you get against an athletic team, even if they're disorganized, if they decide to play above their heads that day and get a little organization, they're going to run Edie up and down the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't seem to have the other players that on a night that they can consistently get you. You know, if they're shooting well, of course, they're a team that could beat anybody. But I feel like, to me, is if Edie's not cooking and they're not able to play that style, I don't know where else they turn to try to pivot and win the game in a different style.
Purdue's a team that could go down in the second round to a team like a Providence or something along those lines where, yeah, Purdue's better on paper, but Providence just hit, you know, a million threes and had a ton of offensive rebounds and turnovers and just ran them up and down on the court.
You know, that's the thing about Purdue, and you saw it last year with FDU. All FDU was triple team Edie and make other guys make shots, and they couldn't do it. That's why they lost. And somebody's going to do that in the tournament with a fast, small team. It's going to make Edie make these be triple teamed, make a pass out, and this guy's got to shoot a wide open three, and they, you know, they miss it.
Another team that's ranked as a number one seed right now that just beat the hell out of Texas for the second time this year is Houston. They've been a perennially great team for the last, what, 5-6 years under Kelvin Sampson. They're in the Big 12 now. And I was kind of looking forward to seeing them in the Big 12. Will, I know this is your conference, so I want you to kind of drive the bus here. But they're finally playing real competition. I think they're holding up really well. They lost to your Jayhawks, I know that, but they've kind of taken care of everybody else. I feel like with Cryer and their style of basketball is the complete antithesis of a Purdue. They can run, they can shoot, and they just want to completely outclass you from a physicality standpoint. So what are your thoughts on Houston, and how far do you think this team could go?
I think Houston could be definitely in the Final Four, if not the championship. And I've watched Houston a lot of times. They're the best defensive team in the country. It's not even close. Like they hold teams under 70, 60 points on occasion. So it's just they played Kansas. They lost. You know, it's at the Fog. Nobody wins there. That's different. But they still held Kansas to like 38% shooting. So it wasn't like they just had a lot of turnovers, a lot of forced shots. Kansas plays great D as well. They have two of the best defenders in college basketball with
McCullough. Was that the Furphy game when Furphy went
nuts?
That was a
Furphy game where he had, I think he had 17.
Yeah, so I think Houston is right there. And they've gone on some deep runs before. If they were to get tripped up, like, how do you see that game going, where if they were to lose, like, what kind of style of play is the opponent playing?
I think the style of play they're playing is the Purdue style, where it's, you know, they control the ball in the half court and they hit their threes. That's the game they're losing, because Houston wants to run and gun. Like, the most Big 12 teams like to run and gun. If they can't run and gun and they have to settle for a half court offense, which they're very good at, but some of these Big 10 teams that have perfected it, I don't think they can hold up. But if they get into a run and gun game, they can beat anybody.
Boys, right now, who do you think is the fourth number one? Is it Arizona? I mean, listen, Saturday, if that was the only Marquette game you've watched all year, you would say, how is this team even a bubble team? But is it Arizona? Is it Marquette? What do you guys think?
I mean, it's tough. It could be – like, you look at Marquette and what happened at UConn, that game was closed for about 8 minutes. And then it was like – I turned it off at halftime. Like, this game is going to be a 25-point win for UConn. So it's tough. I mean, it's an in-conference game. People lose to, like, teams like Providence. You lose to a team – not DePaul, because everybody beats DePaul. But, you know, you – like, the big, I'll put it in, for example, for the Big 12. Like, teams are going to lose to Cincinnati. They're going to lose to UCF. They're going to lose to West Virginia. Like, West Virginia is one of the toughest places to play, and they're terrible.
Right.
But when they're home and that crowd's rocking, they could beat anybody.
So, Tom, what do you think? Do you think Arizona with Caleb Love, like, do you feel pretty good about them? Or do you think that it is going to be a team like Marquette, where maybe if they win the Big East tournament, they get that fourth number one?
I think that Marquette's playing tougher competition, just because the Pac-12, like, I can't even watch it this year.
Bad.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, is it at the point now with Marquette, they're the seventh best team in the country, and the three teams in front of them, I think, are not nearly as good to where they have to win the Big East tournament to get the number one seed? Or if they get to the finals and lose to UConn, I still think if they basically win out from there, that they can still get a top four seed or one of the number ones.
See, I have a different opinion, and I know they're ranked a little bit higher because of a couple bad losses. But I think if UNC dominates that ACC and dominates Duke in the finals,
that's a good
they
point.
Could be the four.
Yeah, UNC's there. I think Tennessee is in the discussion as well with Dalton Connect. I think
UNC is such a Jekyll and Hyde team, though. Talk about a team that just comes out one day. I mean, I've watched like three of their games, and they look like the best team in the country one day, and then the next day they look like, what, a couple years ago when they didn't even make the tournament.
Welcome to becoming a Kansas Jayhawk fan this year.
Yeah, well, I mean,
well,
come
Kansas,
on.
I mean,
you've
I,
had a
I
nice run, Will.
In that category.
I know.
You had a Patriots-esque run.
If Big 12 and knocks off Houston, could they get a one seed?
I mean, they could. You know, also, the other thing in there in the Big 12 is Iowa State's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another team that's a top 10 team that you see them beating Houston and beating Kansas. Why couldn't they be a number one seed? You just beat Houston and you beat Kansas. Like, you should be considered for a number one seed. I don't know if they have enough quad one wins to be up there. I don't know their schedule very well. But if you beat, you know, the number two team Houston and maybe the number 18 Kansas in back-to-back games, you should be considered a one.
I certainly would agree there. I mean, the Big 12 and the Big East have really cemented themselves as the best conferences this year. The Mountain West has been very good as well. But they're not playing consistently the opponents that you're getting. I mean, every night in the Big 12 is a gauntlet. Every night in the Big East is a gauntlet. Will, talk about your Jayhawks a little bit more in detail. This is a team that obviously has the talent. I watched them firsthand in early December when they beat UConn. I've watched them a couple other times this year. I've texted you about them. I still fear them. I still think they're a team that could go on a serious run. But what are you acknowledging as a fan?
So my thoughts, and, you know, I've watched every game of theirs and even the bad losses to Texas Tech and West Virginia and stuff like that. And to say this, and this is, you know, I've been a Kansas fan for 20-plus years, this is one of the worst teams that Bill Self has had at Kansas, and they're still in the top 10. It's just like Tom said about UNC. They look like the best team in basketball on Saturday, and then come Monday, you look like they never played basketball before. The thing with this Kansas team is, unlike the Kansas teams of past, they only have two guys that can score the basketball. They're trying to get the freshman Johnny Furphy in there, and he's looked great, but it's Hunter Dickinson and it's Kevin McCullough. Kevin McCullough's been out for the last three games, and they struggled scoring the basketball. So Kansas has always had three guys that can always score. Now it's just two guys to score, and we're working in the third guy to score. The good thing about this Kansas team is they play amazing defense. And, you know, you have DeJuan Harris Jr., who's one of the best point guards in the country defensively. And then also Kevin McCullough is one of the best players in the country defensively. So if they can find that third scoring option, they're a scary team. But, like, as you said, it doesn't matter what Kansas team's out there, you're not going to bet against Bill Self.
That's my biggest ace in the hole with them, is I think they have a coaching advantage against the majority of teams that they're going to end up playing. And the Big 12, I know Houston's great. I know Iowa State's having an awesome season. In my opinion, they play it in Kansas City, right? The road goes through Kansas. That's until further notice. I mean, I know KJ Adams isn't a real scorer, but he has his nights. If Furphy can get hot, he can make some big-time shots. And I even like your point guard. He keeps things under control, and he can hit a couple threes, but I see what you mean. It can be a bit of a slog if McCullough isn't on.
And the thing come tournament time is this Kansas team, for once in a blue moon, they have no depth whatsoever. They're six men off the bench, maybe play 6 to 8 minutes. Like, these guys are all playing 35-plus minutes, the starters, unless they get in foul trouble. And then they also don't have another big. They bring in Parker Brown, who's a transfer, Christian Brown's brother. You remember Christian Brown?
NBA champion.
his brother, who's a transfer, plays sparingly if KJ Adams or Hunter Dickinson, one, need a blow or they're in foul trouble. But, like, he just gets dominated by anybody that's even anywhere close to his size.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Kansas, it's – I see all the points you're making, and depth is certainly a concern come March. But just from a talent standpoint, they're going to have – and the coaching, obviously, they're always going to have that advantage. This might not be a vintage Kansas team, but it might be one of the scarier ones, because you could look up and they kind of have the makeup of that team that you count out, that you're not really harping on. And then before you know it, it's an Elite Eight game on Sunday afternoon and Kansas is playing.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of reminds me of the national championship team, because nobody thought Kansas was going to win. And then Ochai Agbaji just couldn't miss the whole tournament.
Yep.
And, you know, you had Christian Brown just dunking everything, stealing everything. And you're like, oh, wow, Kansas is for real. Kind of reminds me, not of that team, but of the feeling of, you know, Kansas not going to win it.
Yeah, no, I get that. Moving on to the next topic here, and this was not in the original notes, but we have to bring it up as we've talked about our teams. And Tom, this is not a great note for you, but we kind of need you to give your thoughts on the Rick Pitino press conference from yesterday. They blew a terrible game against Seton Hall. For some reason, they were playing at the UBS Arena on Long Island. I don't know why they weren't playing, at least on campus. Pitino went scorched earth on his team. So what were your thoughts and takeaways from kind of his meltdown at the presser?
UBS Arena, a very nice place. I was there on Tuesday for a Stevie Nicks Valentine's Day concert. Shout out to Michaela. Ooh. Yeah, it was a lovely time. But it clearly wasn't a lovely time for Richard Pitino during that game. I mean, I knew this team was in trouble early last week when he benched Soriano, who is pretty much the only holdover that actually plays significant minutes from the previous regime. And I have a couple of theories. I mean, first of all, Rick Pitino, let's just say it. You know, amazing coach. I'm so happy to have him here, even though he's, you know, on the back nine of his career. But he's the consummate liar, right? I mean, for him to sit up there and say that this is the worst experience he's ever had coaching. I mean, I was young when he coached the Celtics, but there is YouTube and it does exist. And I read some fucking stories about that. I guess he's not having as good of a time because he can't have fucking prostitutes in the dorms at St. John's. I don't know. That's just me. But for me, I think he's got an alternative plan. I think he does not like any of the underclassmen transfers that he has. I just think he's going to shit on them until they leave, and he's going to get more guys in here that he likes better because he was able to have a full year of recruitment and kind of get his roots in a little bit more.
Are you concerned at all that this is going to turn off potential recruits and transfers, though?
That's a good point. That's a good point. They don't call him Slick Rick for nothing, and St. John's has sucked for so long that I honestly, Sean, I don't know, and I just gotta fucking cross my fingers at this point.
I get it. Will, what did you pick from
it? I look at it too. Like, if you're an inner city kid, if you're from one of the boroughs or whatever, you know, your father grew
up. We should have a fence around New York.
Yeah. Your father grew up with how good St. John's basketball was, and knowing that you can stay home and your family can be there, and you have, you know, a very good coach, a very good coach to coach college basketball to coach you, and you get to stay at home.
Hold on a minute. Let's pause for a second. Wait a minute. Will Smith, was this just an undertoned hot take out of you? Rick Pitino is not one of the greatest coaches of all time?
I mean, are we talking like maybe top 10, but I wouldn't put him in my top 5.
Sean, isn't he the only head coach? And fine, it was vacated, and I already made the prostitutes joke, so we don't have to go back. He's the only head coach to win a national title at two different schools, right?
I would have to double check. I don't know if Dean Smith or if Roy Williams.
Roy Williams didn't win one at Kansas.
Nah, he didn't win one at Kansas. Self didn't win one.
It's entirely possible.
So, I mean, let's just talk.
Cal Perry won one at
UMass? What?
No.
He won at University of Kentucky, and he owns Kentucky, bro. Louisville and UK.
Yeah, Bill Self didn't win one in Illinois either.
So, it might be right, yeah. Let's just say Sean, let's
just go into it. Will, we're going to go with, you just stumbled into a bit of a hot take, in my opinion, there. Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's 5 coaches that are better than him all time. I just do.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, Coach K.
Okay.
Bill Self.
No, I disagree with that.
Bill Self has 2 national championships.
Rick Pitino has 2 national championships. And don't talk about the vacated thing. If you give me that asterisk, I'm coming to Danbury right now.
I'm not going to give you the asterisk. But also, Bill Self has dominated a conference for the last 15 years. When's the last time Rick Pitino did that? He didn't even do that at Louisville. They were great. They were a great team, but he didn't dominate that conference. Duke won some years. UNC won some years. Even when Notre Dame was decent with Gray, they won some years. Like, he never dominated. Like,
that's a
Bill
fair
Self
point.
Did, like, well, Coach
they
K
weren't.
Did.
They weren't in. They hold on. They weren't in the ACC at that point. They were. They were in the Big East in the last iteration of the Big East, and then went to the American. And they killed the American the first like 2 or 3 years. The only 2 or 3 years they were in there.
Yeah, I mean, if I got to play VCU in North Texas every other week, yeah, that'd be great too.
Sean, I appreciate your devil's advocacy in my favor, but I got to give Will that.
Well,
one.
No, I was just pointing that out that they were really good at the end of the 2000s and early 2010s in the Big East, and then when in 2013 they were an American team. I think
is that a hot take?
Like, I just look at he might be top 5, and Tom. What you said about the 2 national championships at 2 different schools. Didn't even think about that, to be honest. But I'm just thinking about, in my perspective, you have a Coach K with Duke, with a Duke team that was always a top 10 team.
Are you also, but by the way, not to interrupt, sorry to interrupt. That's the name of the podcast.
Sorry to interrupt. Yep.
Are you somewhat interjecting recency bias into this? Because Pitino, we're thinking of Pitino now, where it's like he coached in Greece for a few years and then Iona. Or are we thinking about, you know what I mean?
No, I'm not thinking about that at all. I'm just thinking of him coaching college basketball. I'm not talking about his NBA. I'm not talking about overseas. I'm just talking about college basketball. And Louisville was a very good program when he was there. But, like, you also look at the other schools when he was there. Those recruits were not going to Louisville. They were going to Duke. They were going to Kansas. They were going to UNC. Don't get me wrong. He got good recruits. But my point is, as a coach, he's never dominated like a Bill Self has or a Coach Krzyzewski has.
It's a good point.
He's dominated in spurts. Like, he's had three to five years.
Well, yeah, and you know what? That might be – you guys might be right. That might be Pitino's Achilles heel, maybe, is that clearly with this press conference, he wears out his welcome at places.
Yeah.
Well, that's evident. Yeah.
Yeah, where, you know, it's kind of, I don't know who to compare him to in the NBA. There's a couple coaches that bounce. Well, yeah, Doc Rivers, I guess. Although, yeah, I would say that Pitino's got more success in his version of the playoffs than Rivers. Go ahead, Will.
I had a question for you, Tom. Now, this is my thought, and you mentioned it, him being on the back end of his coaching career. If you're Rick Pitino yourself, like say you're Slick Rick. You're getting prostitutes for the boys.
Nice. Right?
Just say, like, would you rather go to St. John's and struggle, be on a national, not struggle, but, you know, St. John's has been relevant for the first time in how long since he's been there? But would you rather live the cushy life in Westchester and just dominate the MAC until you retire?
I think me personally, I mean, well, first of all, I went to St. John's and I live very close to Westchester, so I know the commute. It's not that bad. Mamaroneck to St. John's is probably 45 minutes, if that. But aside from that, I mean, just knowing who he is, clearly he's a psychopath and wants to prove that he could win another national championship, and that's his reasoning, not to mention he grew up in the city and probably grew up a St. John's fan, even though – where did he go to college? Did he go to Providence? Where did he go?
He went to Providence.
Yeah, he played point guard there or something in like 1940. But he's a New York City kid, and I just think for him it's like he's one of those guys where he's just – he's a fucking winner. Say what you want about him. You're right. He doesn't have the legacy of those other guys, but I think that's strictly because of the fact that he fucking is an asshole and wore out his welcome everywhere, to be honest with you. I think that's the only difference between him and the rest of those guys, is that they were treated like gods and he was just treated like this crazy Italian guy from New York. But, you know, I think he wants to win, and that's why he's here. Me personally, I don't know. I don't know what I'd do at 71. I mean, living on Wingfoot and having a cushy job where you can have any recruit that you want and win the MAC every year doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, well, and obviously you're getting a good amount of money, even though Iona is a small school. You're not getting St. John's money, but still, you're winning every year.
Well, that's another big factor that we didn't mention is he's probably – I mean, I'm going to look it up now while Sean makes his point, but I could imagine the money's very different.
My concern with this whole thing, you know, for people who don't know, because it's fresh, it just happened about 24 hours ago, but he basically ripped every single player on the team. You know, Joel Soriano, he's not fast on the court. He's quote-unquote slow laterally. He said about Chris Ledlam, slow laterally. How can you be a power forward with one, get one free throw in 29 minutes? And these are all players he handpicked, either transferred from Iona, transferred from other programs, brought in as underclassmen. Soriano, as you mentioned, Tom, is the one holdover. And I'll say this, I know he has his deficiencies, but that guy's a tough motherfucker. I feel like he's a really good representation of what you would want to build culture-wise. And I don't know if the current players who have NIL deals, who can play basically wherever they want now, are going to appreciate seeing their coach just ripping them to shreds publicly. If you want to tear them apart in the film room, fine. But this is not really done anymore. And you see coaches like Bill Self who will go out of his way to prop up his kids. I mean, Dan Hurley basically will use any slight that the media has. Like, he'll go out of his way to say, yeah, it's funny how Tristan Newton's not being mentioned as a player of the year. Oh, Donovan Klingon, you see why he's a lottery pick. Like, yeah, they're more talented teams than St. John's is for sure. But when you haven't earned your stripes at that program yet, I mean, shit, this is going to be a really interesting experiment, Tom. Who's going to leave? Who's going to want to go play there?
It's also like Patino owns this program. It's a much different situation. Like, what stripes are there to earn at St. John's? And I know those coaches created that legacy that you mentioned.
Right.
It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, because it's like Patino, again, it goes back to the fact that Patino is so different now that we're getting into talking about him than really most other coaches, most other legendary college basketball coaches, where it's like they even, you know, Bill Self, where did he coach before? Did he coach at Xavier?
Illinois.
He goes, but, you know, everybody remembers Bill Self as Kansas coach. Everybody's going to remember, yep, Coach K, even though, what did he coach, West Point before Duke or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, and go down the line, Roy Williams, he coached at Kansas before that, whatever. But you associate the guys with that program, and Patino is like Patino is different, bro. He's his own legacy, and this is the way he runs his program.
You're right. You're right about that. But he went in and had pretty.
And I'm
much
not saying I think he's right
where he's
doing
gone
this,
in the past.
By the way,
right.
I don't
I'm
think
just
he's
pointing
right.
Out that he's had success early in his career at his past stops, and this is a tough way to indoctrinate yourself in a really tough conference.
Yeah, but also at the same time, I know he's old school and he's trying to build his own legacy. And like going back to what you said about Hurley, and like the thing is though, a perfect example is, you know, Self after Kansas got throttled by an average Texas Tech team. What's Bill Self's answer in the press conference? He goes, "My game plan sucked. Kansas right. shot 23% from the field, but it's my game plan sucked." So, you know, it's the coach that takes credibility for, and he's not saying this player's this, this player's that, this player's this.
Yeah, and Tom, I hear your point. He owns St. John's for sure. I mean, they have committed to him. He is committed to them. But when you're not winning and you're doing this, he's 71. He's not a young coach who just got promoted to their first really big job or is facing the toughest adversity ever. It's like, hey, like, this is what you signed up for, bro. Like, and again, I'm going to go back to my point earlier. He picked these guys. These are his guys. This is not the college basketball of old where he inherited the previous regime, all their players, because they couldn't leave. He pretty much was able to bring in who he wanted year one. And you even look back in May when he was touting the success of his coaching staff, bringing in the recruits that he was so proud of, bringing in the transfers he was so proud of. So to be ripping them publicly and as individuals, I don't know. That's a tough look for the modern college kid who can pretty much go wherever the hell they want.
Oh, I agree with you. Long gone are the days of Bill Knight tossing the chair across the floor.
Also in college these days, it's where these kids can get the money from.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. And listen, I ain't worried about getting the kids the bag. There's my boy Slick Rick is an expert at that and getting more things than that too. We've mentioned that, but you know, I don't disagree with anything you guys are saying. For me, it's just kind of like St. John's has sucked since pretty much I've been alive. So, you know, we've tried everything else. I'm actually happy that he's there and I will, whatever he wants, I'll do.
What does St. John's need to do to make the tournament?
St. John's needs to
win the Big East tournament, I think.
Win out and win the Big East tournament at this point.
Nice. Were they 14-11?
Yeah, and that Seton Hall game was very important.
That was bad. And, you know.
And the Providence game is important, too.
Nobody cares about somebody else's bets. But when they're dominating the first half, and then I was like, oh, this game, you know, looking good for us. It's -6. And then I look at the game, and I'm like, they have 2 points at this 8-minute mark. What happened?
Stop betting with your heart.
I'm kind of confused, too, just to put a bow on St. John's, because I've watched them play the Huskies twice this year. In the first meeting in Hartford, they easily could have won that game. UConn needed only one by.
Are you trying to bait me into defending Rick? Fine, I'll defend him. He's an old man, and he had a moment where he forgot that, you know, where he was. Maybe he thought he was at home.
I think what it is I don't think his players are as bad as he says they are, because they hung with the number one team in the country twice, like pretty decent games. And, you know, you just wonder how you can have a collapse like that.
He's a little sloppy.
As bad as the record is.
I mean, he hasn't played this level of competition in like, what, 5-6 more?
Been a while.
It's definitely been a while. And like even, you know, Iona's only seeing this type of competition in the tournament if they make it.
Exactly.
You know, they'll play that one game against, like, College of Charleston, who's better than them, but that's not a, you know, that's not a Creighton, that's not a UConn.
Exactly. Exactly. That's another thing that could lead into it. He could just be frustrated and, you know, old guys aren't great at controlling their emotions.
Yeah, you're used to beating up on Siena and Manhattan, and then you can't beat up on Providence and, you know, name another team in the Big East, you know, because these are Big East programs.
Yeah.
Minus DePaul. But, you know.
Well, you even look at teams like Butler.
You think you could play
like
at DePaul in your prime?
In my prime? Well, my vertical sucks, so probably not.
Shooter, though.
I mean, if I was a shooter, maybe, if, you know, nobody was around me.
If like, you just put like the
said,
work
hey,
in.
Leave number 11 alone. I probably could hit a couple open threes for sure.
All right. Yeah, I've seen you in New York Sports Club. The line's a little closer in New York Sports Club, but hey.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it definitely is. But listen, I am a men's league champion in your town. Listen, averaging 3.5 points a game, it's fine.
Stud. Will, how many teams in the Big 12 are we going to see in the tournament this year?
I would say best case scenario, 8. Worst case scenario, 6.
Okay.
So you're thinking Houston, yep. Kansas, Iowa State, Texas Tech. who am I missing? Baylor.
Yeah. Does Texas get in?
No.
I don't think they do.
I don't think they do either. They have too many bad losses, and they've been getting blown out a lot. The only team that would probably be on the cusp there is BYU. They're BYU, probably, because they were ranked for a long time.
Oklahoma?
Oklahoma's ranked too, so that's seven. The only team that's on the cusp is maybe Kansas State. That would be the only other team. Oklahoma State's not making it. West Virginia's not making it.
Yeah, TCU, I think, kind of lost their
chances. TCU not going to make it either.
How about the Big East?
Big East.
Top way in here for you too.
Yeah, UConn? I got let's see.
Go ahead.
I think I'm more in love with Providence than the country is. But I'm going to say five teams because Nova's having a bad year.
So what do you got? You got UConn, Creighton, Nova, Marquette, Providence?
UConn, Marquette.
Seton Hall has a
nice resume. No. I didn't have Nova in there. I just said they had a bad year. No, I had it's UConn. Seton Hall's in there. Just going, you know, like Providence right now is on the bubble for sure.
Well, we'll express this on the podcast. If the Johnnies are in the semifinals, I have tickets.
Ooh, what? Garden.
Yeah.
How the hell did you get that?
Oh, Karen Smith got me that for my birthday.
Wow.
So if St. John's is in it, you're my number one call.
Oh, wow. I appreciate that. That's awesome. Karen Smith enjoying her retirement, giving out beautiful gifts.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, so I have the doubleheader game. So whatever games are played, the two semifinal games.
So Sean making
St. John's
trip up?
There.
Nah, not going to make the trip up. But Tom, if you're there, I want all the – you're going to be Instagram living and everything.
Yeah, sure.
I think Butler has a little bit of a case too, just to put a bow on that. I think Butler.
But I think Butler also has to make some noise in the Big East tournament.
They do, but they're a team that you can't count them out just yet.
Before we put a bow on it, you guys want to know the difference in salaries?
Yes, I do.
All right, at Iona he was making, which is like you said, Will, still a great salary, $1.25 million a year, and it's St. John's. What'd you say?
I said sorry, $1.25 million. That sucks, huh?
Nah, that's great for us, but for him, yeah. I mean, now he's got a 6-year deal for $20 million, which obviously comes out to $3.33 million a year, and that's more than double.
Yeah, but also,
so.
my whole point is,
is that more than double? No,
it's almost double. But my whole point was the whole stress thing, and then also
of
the
course.
Winning thing. You're dominating the MAC for, you know, $500,000 or $1.5 million less, and then you go to St. John's and you struggle for $500,000 more. Is it really worth it at 71 years old?
I bet you Iona would take him back because Tobin ain't doing too well this year.
Yeah, Iona's struggling hard. Yeah, but like if you look at Rick Pitino, obviously amazing coach. If he
thank you for changing your attitude,
Iona,
by the
if
way.
If he gets Iona to win like two tournament games in one tournament, he's God.
I mean,
yeah,
I
really thought he was going
to
be.
I wasn't afraid of that first game last year.
I thought he was going to be the first guy to get a team from the MAC to win win a game in the tournament, and then St. Pete's went on that run a couple years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, that was wild. Guys, just the last two things for college hoops before we put that on the back burner for now. Some of these regular seasons are kind of coming to fruition where we're starting to have more clarity as to who's going to win. But I'll use the conference championships in case, Will, you're not back on before then. Each of you guys, just one team for each of the following conferences. Who wins the conference tournament in these conferences? Big 12.
Go ahead, Tom.
Kansas.
Houston.
Big East.
UConn.
Big Ten.
Purdue.
Illinois.
Purdue's not going to get upset in that tournament. They're going to get their hearts broken in the real tournament.
It's three teams in the Big Ten. If you want to put in Michigan State as a dark horse, but they have three ranked teams. They've had three ranked teams all year. Now Wisconsin's not even ranked. You just have Illinois and Purdue.
Who's the kid who came back from the suspension for Illinois who's a damn good player? One of their leading scorers.
I wouldn't know. I don't watch Big Ten basketball.
Drawing a blank on his name. ACC rather.
UNC.
UNC.
Pac-12, Conference of Champions.
Arizona.
Washington State.
I think Arizona's going to dominate.
I think so too, but I just want a little parody.
There you go.
American.
SMU.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mountain.
Utah State.
Utah State's good.
They're a very good team. You have San Diego State, who's ranked, obviously, but Utah State, if you know, they can finish out their season strong. They're a tough team.
San Diego State has some returners from the national championship team, or you know, runner-up team, and they're pretty damn good. It took them a while to get their footing, but they've been playing really good basketball.
Yeah, they've been playing good basketball. I just like the Utah State team. They play well together. They shoot the three ball very well, and they play great defense.
Way too early Final Four prediction. For
you didn't
boys.
Even say the SEC. You said the fucking mid-major teams. You didn't say
I missed
SEC?
I missed the SEC. Sorry about that. SEC.
Auburn.
South Carolina.
I got Tennessee.
Dalton
connects legit, man.
Yeah, he is very good.
Yeah, mine was more of a hope pick.
I still wouldn't count out Coach Cal.
No, that was an impressive win at Auburn the other night.
They dominated.
They did.
That's the battle of the two coaches that can't keep their composure.
Yep.
Battle
every
of heart
year
attacks.
You're proven right, Tom.
What'd you say?
I said every year you're proven right.
Yeah, that's an easy one. That's like, and we're going to segue right into it. That's like saying the Cowboys, when they look good in the regular season, you're going to lose in the playoffs.
Also, my other, I did have a Big Ten question. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
I know we will.
I still had a Big East question for you guys. And, you know, since I went to school in Rhode Island and went to a lot of Providence games, why would Ed Cooley leave Providence, where he established a team that was basically almost ranked every year, to go to Georgetown to be terrible?
Well, do you need me to look up his salary too, Will?
No, I just don't get it, though. I just don't get it.
I think we forget that we make normal people money. So we would obviously, you know, I'm getting a little too deep into psychology here, but obviously we would be like, that's amazing. I would live in Rhode Island all year and have the biggest house there and be, you know, the king of the town, especially now that Hurley's gone and he's not at URI anymore. But
where he dominated, you know, at URI, dominated.
You know, if you tell these guys we can pay you double, I mean, they're gonna take the money.
Also, I'll be honest with you right now, Tom. If they gave me $1 million to coach the Cowboys and the Jets said, hey, I'll give you $4 million, I ain't leaving.
You're staying with the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
That's spoken like a fan.
But you're also a fan. These coaches aren't fans. They're, yeah. I think that Georgetown, there's something about that job that I think is very tempting still. And it's a private university.
It's funny, Sean. The shine of the Georgetown name and what you're talking about hasn't quite worn off yet. St. John's had that same shine, but they sucked for a lot longer, so it wore off.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think a team to look out for is Villanova, where if Neptune doesn't get his shit together and they have three or four lean years, I mean, they're going to move on, because you've got guys who are national champions killing it in the NBA right now. You're not far removed from them winning two and four years, whatever it was.
Yeah,
So like you can't have these what we're trying to remember about, particularly the Big East, is basketball is really all that these schools have. They don't play for, so if your basketball program goes to shit and you become irrelevant, you've got nothing. So they have to take chances on some of the coaches. I think, Tom, you're right. The shine hasn't worn off the Georgetown, you know, name yet, and I think Cooley believes that he can restore that program to prominence, but man, they have been bad for a while.
Think about it. Georgetown has followed the exact path of St. John's. They hire a bunch of shitty coaches. Then you hire your school's legend. That doesn't work out. And then you bring in, well, I guess Cooley for them, but St. John's brings in a legend. Although Georgetown didn't skip like St. John's did, right? Or did they have a coach in between?
No, they fired Ewing and then went right to – maybe they had an interim, because I think you got fired.
They definitely had an interim, and then because Cooley was still coaching Providence when they fired
you. Yeah, so it's
you see Juwan Howard at Michigan too. That hasn't worked out.
It worked out for 1 year. when they were a good team.
Well, yeah, and it's always that the first year when the other coaches' recruits are, you know, the seniors are there and they all know what to do without needing a coach.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, boys, let's do it.
All right, Will.
Do we have to do this?
We have to do this, baby. Mm-hmm.
You got to wax poetic about your Jayhawks forever.
Yeah, it's about that time. Yeah, I mean, disappointment would be a soft term to be what I was. I was very silent. I did answer every phone call after, every text after.
Class act.
But to come out like that and knowing the fact that Mike McCarthy still has a job is a complete joke to me. If you lost a close game, yeah, obviously it sucks. Dallas chokes all the time. But, like, Dak Prescott throwing two bad interceptions, can't get it done. Obviously had MVP numbers during the regular season. That's great and all, but do it in the playoffs.
How does your defense play like that, though? Come on. How? How is it that bad?
This is the thing, and, like, part of me is happy that Dan Quinn is gone because Dan Quinn loves these hybrid players. We had two linebackers that were 210 pounds that are converted safeties. Obviously, we lost Van Der Esch for the year, and he was our run-stopping linebacker. You have Micah Parsons playing D-end, which he's been phenomenal at. But then you have two undrafted guys, a guy in the seventh round and a guy in the sixth round, or a guy that's unadrafted and a guy in the sixth round, sorry, playing linebacker, starting at linebacker. They're converted safeties. How are you ever going to stop the run when you have a 330-pound lineman coming at you? It's just – also, the whole game, I said to myself, why do we have six defensive backs on the field when it's second and two? Why? It was just holes for days. Like, I don't know if Clinton was thinking about, oh, I'm going to be coaching Seattle. It just had his head checked out. Obviously, he didn't go to Seattle, went to Washington. But it was just bad. And then the play calling was atrocious. Atrocious. How many times are you going to run the ball on first down for no gain? Not a play action, not a nothing. And that was the problem with the Cowboys offense this year. Tony Pollard's great, but Tony Pollard is better when he's a spell guy.
Tony Pollard's also not Zeke. You can't just give him the ball and expect 4 yards every time.
All the shit from Jerry saying we're going all in next year, I don't care about the future. If you're going all in, I want T. Higgins. I want Derrick Henry. I want anybody that can stop a run on defense. That's what I want. I don't care about the salary. I don't care about any of that. If you want to go all in, those are the guys you need to get. Gallup is gone. Cooks is probably going to stay because he had a decent second half of the year. And obviously, you need a number two. Like, Gallup might not be a number three on a lot of teams, but you need a solid number two. I would trade for Stephon Diggs tomorrow.
Yeah, your team has been feast or famine, but what I was – really blown away with, and Tom and I talked about it, you know, extensively the day after. But
it feels like years ago.
I just couldn't believe the fact that you're right about the run defense. The run defense sucked all year, but you made Jordan Love look like prime John Elway. And yeah, I know Love is a nice player, he was picking you guys apart. And
you see this all year. They said they praised Dan Quinn about how good the defense has been. Look at the defense when they play good teams. They're atrocious. It's terrible.
Well, you also hadn't lost at home in like 2 years.
They played the Bills. They got killed. Josh Allen didn't even need to throw the ball in that game, and they would have won by 30.
I can feel the pain in your voice.
Will, this is a serious question. Are you more angry, or do you feel more a sense of defeatism knowing you're running it back?
I'm just the word I would use is disappointed. I'm just disappointed.
That's always the worst. Like when you come home from school and like
your mom's not mad at you.
They're not yelling at you or screaming. They're just, you know, we're very disappointed. Man, that cuts.
Like I do. To be honest with you, I do like the hire of Mike Zimmer as DC.
I do too, actually.
I do like that. He's going to change things on defense. He's going to tell Jerry to get a couple. We need big bodies in the middle. Because that's who he is. He's a run-stopping guy. And then, you know, you get Diggs back. Who knows how he's going to be after his ACL. But him and Bland are just – they're not coverage corners. They're ball hawk corners.
Yeah.
They're going to get burnt.
Yeah, you need a corner that's a coverage guy, and it's not Stephon Gilmore at 52 years old.
But if you have pass rush, if you get your pass rush going, those guys do turn the ball over a lot. But if you don't, yeah, they're going to get burned.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm seeing rumors all day. Obviously, I think we had the 24th pick or whatever, 26th, whatever it is. And they're talking about drafting Blake Corum from Michigan. I'm like, okay, no. Why would you draft a running back at the end of the first round when you have need? Tyron Smith is going to retire. He's a free agent now. Does he come home on a friendly deal? He's still a very good left tackle if he stays healthy. You have a young center. You have a young guard, but Zach Martin's getting older. He's still the best, but he's getting older. Terrence Steele had his problems this year. Still a good player, but you need another body on the offensive line that you need to draft. You have no D tackle. I mean, you're going to keep running Jonathan Atkins out there? The guy's like 38 years old.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, Will, though, the one thing the Cowboys have done exceptionally well, though, is draft.
Do you think that's not Jerry? That's Will McClay. It's not Jerry.
Whoever it is has done a really good job replacing some of these older players, though.
Yeah, for sure. Which is, you know, and they've drafted, and don't get me wrong, they've had some busts over the years. But, you know, the fact that, like, how much Jerry Jones, who owns the most prolific franchise in professional sports, knows nothing about football. It boggles my mind. The guy wanted to draft Johnny Manziel. Where's
Johnny Manziel? He didn't watch tape, bro. I stand behind that pick. He was just in a bad place.
Oh, sorry. We drafted an all-pro center for 3 straight years. Sorry, in his place instead. Granted, he had an immune disease that didn't let him play, which kind of sucked, but he was an all-pro for 3 straight years in the league. But I don't know. I like the pieces we have. The question now, Dak's going to get a new contract that's going to make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks, if not the highest paid quarterback. My thing right now, if the Cowboys don't even make the Super Bowl next year, you got to blow it up and start over. You have to blow it up. You keep key pieces like Bland, who doesn't make much, Diggs, Parsons, Tyler Smith on the offensive line, Biotis on the offensive line, CeeDee Lamb, everybody else goes. I don't care if you're fucking 3-14 every single year for the next 3 years. Dak's gone. If he does not get us to Super Bowl next year, he's gone.
Whoa. Sean.
See, if in your hypothetical, if you're blowing it up, I would get as many first-round picks as I could for Parsons and Lamb.
The timelines, which are way more important, in my opinion, in the NFL than the NBA. The timelines
I totally.
Yeah, what's the point of keeping those two great players if you're a terrible team and you don't have?
I might keep Parsons. I don't want to be the guy that got rid of Parsons.
Yeah. I wouldn't either, but somebody was the guy that got rid of Tony Dorsett, and that worked out pretty well.
True. That's true. But also, I'm looking at it this way, too. Like, I don't know what the front office is doing. I don't know how much Jerry's. You make a trade. Obviously, you didn't give up much. For Trey Lance, and the guy doesn't even suit up. Why'd you trade for him?
I think that was just cover for Dak if he got hurt.
It's supposed to be a guy that pushed Prescott to be like, hey, maybe you won't be the starter next year. And the guy doesn't even get second team reps. Like, what's the point?
He's a project that they don't have anything invested in him, and they could watch him in practice and scout team to see if he's getting any better. That's all it is.
It's just a painful way to go out. Like, if we lost that game and both sides of the ball played well and it was not a back-and-forth game, but it was a defensive struggle because our defense played well, I wouldn't be as upset as I am. But, like, to go out like that, like, I knew it was over after the first drive. I'm like, this team just went 90 yards. They were averaging 8 yards a play. Like, get out of here.
It was bad, dude. It was really bad.
This is good radio, man. That's all I'm gonna say.
Like
Will's got his fucking fastball today, Sean.
My girlfriend will attest to it. My girlfriend will attest to it. Like, when Dak Prescott threw that pick six, which is one of the worst throws I have maybe ever seen in my life, I wanted to throw my PS5 off the balcony.
You didn't though.
I did not. But like. And she's
see,
like,
he's maturing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I have my parents texting her the whole game because my parents know better not to text me.
Oh, they just want to make sure you're alive.
Yeah, the police drive by a couple times, do a wellness check.
She's like, my mom goes, is Will yelling at the TV? And Steph just goes, he hasn't said a word in 3 hours. I'm like, that's how it was. I was just sitting there with my arms crossed, laid back on the couch.
Did you cry?
No, I was too mad to cry.
He was too broken to cry. I think the Cowboys have emotionally
sports are the only thing that make you feel like a kid.
Like when they were making dumbass play calls, like I was just laughing at the TV screen. I was laughing. Like we're down 24 and it's 2nd and 8 and we're gonna run Tony Pollard.
It's so
fun.
Sports are the only thing you can't control. Like it's you feel like a kid when you get yelled at by your parents and you can't do something. You're just so angry that you want to just punch yourself in the face.
This is the funny thing because I watched the Super Bowl with my brother, and he goes to me. He goes, "So is it finalized?" I'm like, "Cause you know there were some rumors out there that like Mike McCarthy's job isn't really safe. They're still thinking about Belichick." And I'm like, "No." I'm like, "McCarthy will be coaching our team. I don't know if he's going to coach for the whole year, but he'll be there." Joe goes, "Future Super Bowl champs next year." He goes, "Nobody will ever think that the Cowboys, after bringing everybody back, after getting blown out, would win the Super Bowl." So, I mean,
no, but they're going to be 12-5 or 11-6 again.
I mean, what's the great thing about going 12-5 and winning the division or being a wild card when you lose in the first round?
Well, that's the problem. Is it supposed to be a good thing that you're getting these home playoffs?
You don't have the quarterback to get you over the top. And the coach doesn't help, but it's really just Dak is what he is, and it's just a fucking it's a brutal spot to be.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just it was a rough couple of weeks for me after that game.
I believe it, man.
A lot of
you got any other
walks.
Hot takes for us?
Yeah, let's hear a hot take. You got anything else?
I have one that is not football related.
Let's hear.
Because I'm watching the game right now. How does Tony Bennett still have a job?
Ooh.
For UVA.
They won a national championship, granted, but you also lost to first team to ever lose to a 16 seed, and not just lose, you got fucking embarrassed. And I feel like every time I watch them, they can't score more than 40 points. And right now, I'm watching them right now, they're losing 75-40 to Virginia Tech, who's 14-11.
They beat Wake Forest 49-47 the other day.
Like, I feel like if you score more than 50 points against Virginia, you win by 10.
I mean, they belong in the Big Ten, honestly.
But, like, how do you still have a job? That's my question. That would be my hot take just because I'm watching this game right now.
I guess it's because Virginia wasn't – it's because Virginia wasn't a Duke or any of those teams that we named earlier. So he basically is their Coach K.
That was my whole thing about when people say Boeheim's one of the best coaches of all time. That's a joke.
Ooh, that might be spicier than your other take, Sean.
I like that take.
You have one national championship in
75
I do.
Years. I like that take, too, because he had to ride one of the greatest
so
freshmen
many,
of all time, too.
Yeah, they had so many very good to sometimes great teams.
Although I will say,
ironically, some of their deepest runs came with teams that were 7 or 8.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I feel like he was like the ultimate get more out of less guy.
Yeah, but also, if you look at it, if you don't have Carmelo Anthony, they don't win a national championship. So he would have all these wins without a national championship. How do you consider one of the greatest coaches of all time?
I'd have to go back into the history of, like, in the 80s with Earl Monroe and be like, how many of those teams should have been the Final Four teams? I mean, you had the Big East back then that was just a motherfucker. And then about 6 years later, you know, UConn starts getting good and –
But also,
St. John's. I mean, it was St. John's and Georgetown and Villanova with Syracuse. Those four programs just fucking killed each other for years.
Also, my other thing is what I don't get is, you know, athletes aren't what they were in the 80s now. How are you still running zone in the 2000s where one guy can just dribble all the way through it and lay it up? That was the biggest thing for me. Like, he didn't adapt to the time.
Well, yeah, that's the difference between him and Coach K, is Coach K adapted to the times. Will, you're making all good points here. John, I might have to buy this hot take.
I'm buying it, too. I mean, I think they would have to have a very good replacement ready to go. Because for as many faults as Bennett has and Virginia has, they're perennially a ranked team.
I think he's getting Mello's kid.
That's going to the tournament, rather. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of hot takes. I was a couple years off, and the Lions win the division.
That was a good take, just a couple years early.
just a couple years early on the Lions. I was right on Gary Sanchez. He's probably playing in the fucking men's league in Dominican Republic right now.
Jesus Lord.
I mean, do I have any NFL football hot takes next year? I'm trying to think. The Cowboys will go 12-5 and lose in the first round to the 49ers.
That's the coldest take I've ever heard.
Who wins the NFC North?
NFC North? The Lions, again.
Okay.
With the Packers finishing one game behind.
Okay. I was gonna say, there's a lot of Packers stock.
Now, are the Bears going to draft Caleb Williams?
Yeah.
I say yes.
He's going to interview well. He's going to destroy the combine. And the teams are just going to gush over him. I'm telling you, the script is going to be completely flipped when these guys get a little more exposure.
So what do the Bears get for Justin Fields if they trade him? Like, if they trade him to Vegas.
I think just because, based off the way he played the second half of the season, because he did have a pretty good run there, I think he would fetch like a second and a third, Sean.
I was thinking second and a fourth. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he'll go. I don't think he'll get a first. Bears,
why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you do that? Because then you still have the ninth pick, where you can get another receiver with DJ Moore. You get a Duze or whatever his name is from Washington.
Yeah. I was actually talking about this with a friend of mine earlier, and I was saying that it makes cap sense too, because Fields was going into year four. You're going to have to, before the season, commit to either giving him the fifth-year option or not. And the last thing you want to be is what the Giants were with Jones, which is you don't give him the fifth-year option, and then he balls out and you got to pay him.
Yep.
So you get 5 years of Caleb Williams on a rookie deal. You could build the rest of your team. Yeah. You're not going to have that opportunity again. Like you said, you got the ninth pick. Go get him another receiver to pair with
at the Seahawks teams that were good. You had a third-rounder, Russell Wilson, with a built team around him.
It's the ultimate cheat code. That's why I get so fucking
I've been screaming this for years.
Yes. Tom and I have been screaming it from the fucking mountaintops. Like, the biggest crime you can commit as a GM in the NFL is having a quarterback on a rookie deal and not surrounding them with as much fucking talent as humanly possible. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, here's my other question. If one of those quarterbacks falls, do the Giants draft them?
Yes.
Still owe Daniel Jones $88 million.
Yeah, but you know what? It's coming off another neck injury and now an ACL.
It's a risk you got to take.
You got to know. And you know what? The other thing, too, I'm not going to go long on this. Brian Daboll deserves the right to have his own quarterback.
I don't think he wanted
Daniel Jones, but the situation played out where you had to pay him. Every team would have done what the Giants did, which is pay him when they did. But it's not his guy, and he earns the right to be able to have his offense with his guy.
Who would you want, though? Because I'm guessing maybe Jaden Daniels? Would you take Jaden Daniels?
Obviously Caleb's not going to be in the running. So
I don't think Drake May is going to be in the running.
Yeah, one of the other top two is who I would want. I mean, I'm hearing J.J. McCarthy. I do not want any part of him at six.
No.
Would I trade back into the first if he was around? Sure. I think a team's going to talk themselves into him. Meanwhile, teams are talking themselves out of Penix. I mean, if I'm the Giants, I'm drafting Malik Nabers or Rome Odunze, because either of those receivers are going to be a number one option for Jones, who's going to start the season, or the rookie quarterback who you bring in and maybe plays later on in the year or in 2025. So
yeah, I mean, the other thing is you still owe the guy money who delivered my Amazon package to Kenny Golladay.
Motherfucker.
Did you get an autograph?
No, he asked for my autograph. I had to sign something.
I heard you're on the pod.
Yeah, mine might be more valuable than his.
Yeah,
I would pay a good single dollar for your autograph.
I appreciate that.
I would pay absolutely nothing. I would pay Kenny Golladay to go away and not give me an autograph.
Yeah.
So I would pay the return shipping before I paid the shipping to get it.
Also, Tom, what's the Jets' final record next year with a healthy Rodgers?
10-7.
Playoffs?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Super Bowl?
I
don't know. I got to see what we do in the draft. But yeah, we'll go 10-7.
What pick do you have?
What are they, in the teens?
10.
11? Yeah, 10.
Yeah. Offensive lineman, obviously.
It's we might as well put the pick in now.
Yeah, for an offensive lineman.
Yeah, whoever's there.
Yeah.
It's a great offensive line draft this year.
It is, for sure.
Things are lining up.
It looks good as long as they change that turf to grass.
I know. Your buddy Phillips is still crying about that.
Yep. I mean, also, you know, those soccer players are not going to be happy in a couple years.
Yeah, that might actually be Sean. Well, that's a good point.
They're actually changing it to grass that for the World Cup.
Then why don't you keep it?
Fucking keep it.
Hey, listen, I don't make the rules. I'm just saying they should have turned it to grass years ago. That turf sucks.
I mean,
how many Achilles injuries do we need on that goddamn thing?
I mean, like, I know you guys are not a hockey podcast, but that grass underneath that ice yesterday looked amazing.
I'll have to look at it. I did not see it. What state was that in?
What?
What state was it in?
That was played at MetLife. The Outdoor Rangers Islanders at MetLife.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was played at MetLife, and they had grass. It wasn't the turf. They had grass down.
I didn't know. I thought it was always turf. That's ridiculous that they don't do that.
It looked like grass. It did not look like the New York Giants or New York Jets turf.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Probably the same people making those decisions are the ones who decided to build the disgusting thing and make it look like a fucking Venetian blind in the first place.
And also put it in like one of the shittiest places ever and the toughest places to get to.
Yep. I can't believe they're holding the final of the World Cup. That blows my mind.
Well, it's still probably one of the biggest. They wanted to have it in New York, and that's, you know, the only place you could have it. It was probably by default, I would assume.
Europeans are gonna fucking come here and be like, "What the fuck is this shit?"
Yeah, you said we were going to New York. We're playing in this stupid swamp.
Yeah, well, they can. I think if you squint hard enough, I don't know. I went by there a couple days ago. I should have looked to my left, but I think if you squint hard enough, you can see the skyline.
Yeah, I mean, through the smog, probably.
That's the skyline of Manhattan or of Newark?
Very true. Newark. All right, boys, we got anything else for Will?
Nope. You let me be heard about the Cowboys. I'm good there.
Will, this was great, man. It was so good to have you back.
Yes, it was.
Oh, happy to be back, boys.
We got to get you on for the conference tournaments and then some March Madness action.
Yeah, for sure.
Sounds good to me. Can't wait.
All right, so I hope everybody enjoyed that, our little check-in with Will Smith. I think we'll be having him on a little bit more often, Sean. But now we're here to talk about golf.
We are here to talk about golf. The Genesis happened this weekend. One of my picks, not the guy that I fucking should have picked to win the damn event, but Hideki, who was on my foursome last week, did end up winning this event, Tom.
Indeed.
And he was killing it. Shoots a 62 on Sunday to win it by 3 strokes over Will Zalatoris, who had quite the weekend. But a lot to talk about from this tournament, man. There were a bunch of storylines, from people having the shits to withdraws and DQs and everything in between.
Yeah. I mean, just to talk about the winner first, Zalatoris looked incredible. I think I tweeted out he's already almost all the way back. It's amazing. But for Matsuyama, I mean, I think I've watched the highlights of that Sunday round like 3 times, and today's only Monday. It was just surgical. Like, I mean, he wasn't just hitting like solid approach shots or even good approach shots or even great ones, honestly, now that I'm thinking about him. He was hitting them to tap-in range consistently. Yep. Like, he just had everything going from the approach game to the short game. Even when he sprayed it off the tee, he figured out a way, even out of the rough, where he's not going to get that much spin to get it up there. It was a sight to behold. It was a clinic, really.
It was, and if you're shooting a 62, that means you're dialed into every aspect of your game, and he truly was. And what I loved about this was Will Zalatoris easily could have won this golf tournament, but Hideki went and just grabbed it by the throat. And the way that he was playing was just – he came all the way back. He came storming back, and he was on one of those runs where you just have to appreciate what you're watching. It wasn't anything that Zalatoris really did anything that bad.
Nah, it was a heater, man. Hideki. Some of those shots were just like shots that – I think if it wasn't the final round of the tournament, he wouldn't even take. He would have laid up on a Thursday or a Friday.
Yeah, but he was not having any part of that.
No, man, and he's a baller. He really is. He's ice cold. And he's making a push for that final spot as well.
Well, you know I love him. He's been a name that I followed for a long time. He's kind of an OG, like real hard, like long driver of the ball. He's fought some injuries. He's fought some other things. I know there was talk about him possibly going to Live or being offered for Live, but he's stayed, and this was really a tour de force. This was a, you use the word clinic. I don't think there's a better word to describe what he did this weekend, particularly on Sunday.
No, I mean, you don't see that too often on the tour, a couple times a year, if that, and he just woke up and was like, I'm going to be better than everybody today, and I'm going to have the best round of my life. It probably wasn't for him, but it looked like it out there. A lot of fun. All right, let's recap our picks, Sean.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about the rest of the tournament.
Well, I would like to talk about a lot of the storylines, but if you want to recap the points,
just the
first,
picks really quick,
that.
And then we'll jump into our picks later. Like you said, Sean, you got a point on your Hideki W. Luckily, I was able to stave you off, and I had a really good week. I finished 18th in the averages, and you finished 22nd. I also tallied up the week that I mentioned last week's pod that I hadn't tallied up, and I won that one as well. No big deal. So we are at 4-1 now, Sean. You were able to eke out that one with the Hideki W.
Needed it big time, and would have been even sweeter if I picked him to win the tournament outright. But
hey,
it's okay.
Went right back in it.
Yep, he took care of some business. We're chipping away. Like I mentioned at the top, Tom, a lot of storylines. Let's start with Will Zalatoris, who finishes T2, shoots a -14. You said that he might be all the way back. What were your biggest acknowledgments from him throughout the weekend?
I mean, the swing just looks really fluid, and the short game is really back. And for me, it's like, honestly, when he gets back to fully healthy and just confident, like now that he's got that lap golf putter and the new putting stroke and whatnot, like, I don't know, he might just rip off a major or two within the next 2 years.
I know we did our preseason predictions of major winners. Is he somebody you could see kind of infiltrating there and taking
absolutely.
One this year?
Absolutely. He clearly knows how to score in majors. I mean, I think he's finished top three in a handful of them, and he hasn't played that many. Remember, he played
nine and finished top three in three of them.
Yeah, and I don't even think he played. I don't know if he played any of them last year. I can't remember. That back injury was early on in the year, and I mean, if you just watch, I think I retweeted and follow us on Twitter at Sorry Sports. But I mean, his putting stroke. Go back and look at his putting stroke last year or the year before. Clearly, he's worked on that a ton because he is rolling the rock pure.
Yeah, no, I mean, his putter was dialed in this weekend for sure. And you're right, he withdrew at the Masters, and that was the last we saw of him last year. So. Moving on down the rank, you got Hadwin, Cantlay, and Schauffele finishing T4, -13. This is not a weekend I want to kill.
5 o'clock hitters club.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm not going to kill Cantlay this weekend. I was thinking about it. You know, like he was dealing with the flu. I know he still plays egregiously slow. I felt like he was actually playing a little faster for his normal routine. But dealing with the flu and playing in those conditions, that's got to suck. This is not a weekend I'm going to kill him. But I know you look at the final results on the leaderboard, and he's kind of exactly where you would think he would be.
Yeah. No, he's a perpetual top five, having the shits or not. But yeah, I mean, apparently in and out. Was it in and out, or is that a joke?
Yeah. No, I don't think that was the thing that contributed it to everybody, but that was what was being served. Tiger was housing it.
Yeah, tough advertising for them. But yeah, I mean, Tiger had to pull out. You know, maybe it's tougher to control yourself when you get a little bit older. And sometimes it hits people a little differently. Everybody's body chemistry is different. Some people could play through it. Maybe Tiger had to hit the bathroom every 3 minutes. I'm making excuses for the guy here, if you can't tell.
Well, Tiger, I mean, listen, everybody was so excited to see him play, and you could see he was fighting through. Just a little bit.
You had to get out there. You're gonna get yourself. You're gonna get rid of the Under Armour and start wearing Sunday Red.
I don't think I'm gonna be rocking any Sunday Red anytime soon. But listen, man, everybody was excited to see him play. It was disappointing. And I'm just, this is not a guy, whether it was an illness or whether it's his back or whatever it is, I don't think this is a guy that can give you four consecutive rounds of golf anymore. It just, you would need a real miracle, but everybody wants to mention 2019. Tom, that was 5 years ago. You know, that wasn't
5 years ago, and it was a whole leg ago. Remember that, exactly. Everybody. I mean, the guy exactly. Almost lost his fucking leg, and he says it all the time himself. The hardest part is not playing the tournament. It's the amount of walking that he has to do over those 4 days, and then the back clearly starts to tighten up when he does do that walking. Sean, you can attest to that more than I can, and then he explained it to the reporter that asked this question. I think it was Dan Rappaport on kind of what caused the shank there, that, you know, he just couldn't get down into the swing and presented the hosel because his back was spasming out.
And sometimes you don't realize. I mean, what we have to remember too is he is in the top 1% of athletes, and the amount of force and velocity and torque that he puts on his golf swing to be able to generate the power and the accuracy that he does. Sometimes you don't realize that your back's not going to be responsive until you're mid swing or until you're on your backswing. And that's kind of what it looked like to me, is he was like, all right, I'm ready to let it rip. And mid swing, his back just kind of gave out on him. So that's what I'm saying.
A lot of mental stuff has to go into that too. Cause you know, when you play hurt, it's kind of like all you're thinking about. And I did that at like a high school and college level. I didn't do that at Tiger Woods level.
Think about, like, if you're driving a car that you know isn't right, or you know you have engine trouble.
There you go. That's a good analogy.
Right? And you're every time you get behind the wheel, and you're just hoping that you get to where you
need to be. Turn the radio off to see if you can hear it.
Yeah. Make sure that you're not cranking the AC or the heat. You're kind of doing all of this. And the first couple drives, okay, fine. It's fine. But then every time you get behind the wheel, you're wondering, is this going to be the moment? Is this going to be it? Am I going to be stranded? Am I going to have to call AAA? What the fuck's going to happen here? And that's what it is with your body. The mental wear and tear of every single step you take, every single swing you take. It's a grind mentally, and it's going to wear on you, particularly with somebody who's used to performing at one of the highest capacities of any athlete of all time.
I mean, yeah, that puts it into perspective. It's like if I go out and walk around a golf, I'm thinking about my next shot, or probably pissed about my last shot. Tiger is just like, all right, next step. Like that's tough to then go play and be the greatest golfer of all time.
Right. So just to give people perspective, I mean, it's not radical. It just is. It when people wonder why, he has all this rest. I don't think you're taking into consideration. It's not really rest. It's maniacal attempt at all the prehab work he has to do, all the rehab work he has to do, all of the warm up, all the recovery. It's a full time job. It kind of makes, I know it's completely different sports, but it makes what Brady did and what LeBron's currently doing just absolutely incredible. Further on down the leaderboard, I mean, you got Scotty again. It's just the broken record. I kind of don't even want to do it again. He shoots a minus 8.
Don't have to mention him. We know he's there.
He was top in every single category, and then the bottom at putting. Again, it's just can't straighten it out, dude. Can't straighten it out.
No, and honestly, maybe it's one of those things where, you know, I mean, he did have an off season, but it seems like this year was kind of in flux and whatnot, and coming off the Ryder Cup. Was that this past year or the year before? It's such a blur.
Ryder Cup was this past season.
Exactly. So he was, you know, there was not really an off season for him to work at the putter, and the issues had cropped up, what, kind of like, even in the Masters this past year, we were talking about it, right?
It was basically right after Phoenix.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's I think it might be continue until the off season. I think he might actually need some time off.
You're starting to think that, right? And when you're watching a tournament like this, like I had two thoughts. I had one where there's still so many great players in this field, but the other one of me is like, we're missing so many other stars, like big time names, big time stars, and it sucks. But
Rahm is really the void.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Because he's kind of that alpha. He's got that very interesting personality, and he's very demonstrative, and he's somebody you really want to tune in to watch whenever he's teeing off. But I think the biggest thing is you look at Scotty Tommy, he's just played a shit ton of golf for a long time. And to your point, he hasn't had the ability to take a long time off and get his mind right and really work on his putting. So it's kind of just going to be a broken record until then, I think.
Yeah, no, it's probably one of those things where he just has to get in the lab for a real long time and figure it out. It's not like one day he could feel it, one day he can't. All right, you want to talk about Spieth real quickly? Was it a joke or people did the food poisoning contribute to him rushing out of the scoring tent?
Well, I was listening to the NLU guys today and. Unbeknownst to me, because I don't know the true in and outs of every single rule, is you don't have to sign it right then and there. Like, you can take a bathroom break, come back and sign it. So I guess he was just very hastily signing it and he did it wrong again. What is this, the third time he's been disqualified? Second for an improper grade on a scorecard?
To be honest, what's hilarious is there's an interview with Smiley Kaufman and JT, maybe? I don't know. But he was talking about how when it comes to gambling and whatnot in these crazy games that are so much harder than keeping score of just a one round of golf, Spieth is the guy where he could be shit-faced and he still has every bet correct. So that just makes it even funnier that he fucks up his just like simple scorecard.
I mean, this is, yeah, just how does this happen again? I mean, I've never heard of this happening really with anybody else. And this happened to him a second time, I think, in like 2 years.
Yeah, you got to put it on Greller. I mean, you got to put it on his caddy. He's got to be on top of him now. This won't happen again. Greller, he'll get him.
It can't happen again. JT, speaking of, did not make the cut. He was two over. I look at this as just a tough weekend, and that's it. He'd been playing too well lately to be worried, but that's just my vantage point. What are your thoughts?
I'm right there with you. It's a smaller event, smaller field, so a lot of players were not invited, and a lot of players didn't make the cut. There's only a top 50 something, so I think JT will be fine. I think he's probably taking this week off, and it's well deserved for all these boys.
Oh yeah, looking at the field for this weekend, it was tough for me to find four names I knew. Last named on this one, Max, shoots a 7 under, T14. I thought it was a very average weekend for him, but you know, he just didn't have a meltdown weekend.
Visibly off. He was angry on a couple of tees that I saw. Another week off for him will be good too.
I want a little bit more out of Colin. He's not playing up to the capabilities.
Yeah, you know, he got off to a hot start and then he's kind of pittered off, so we'll see. He might not need a time to break off. I think he needs to go kick some ass, but that's just me.
Any other names on the leaderboard, or you want to get to this weekend?
Nah, let's talk about this weekend.
Okay. So we got the Mexico Open at Vedanta.
Vedanta. Never played. Never been to Mexico. Have you?
I actually have. Puerto Vallarta, twice.
For what? Family or spring break?
Nah, family vacations when I was like a freshman and sophomore in high school.
So you go out, you went out, so you did the classic, like, yeah, I went to Mexico this year, lost my virginity. No. You'll never meet her, but she was super hot.
Yeah, that was not my style in that age, but it was, I also will never be like, cause everybody, it's like, oh, are you going to Tulum? Are you going to Cancun? Where you go? I'm like, I've been to Mexico. I stayed at a resort with my parents when I was a early teenager, like. I've never had the Mexico experience, but listen, with the ginger complexion, it's tough enough being in Texas. Send That's me down true. There, and I might die.
Yeah, you're built for the snow.
Yeah,
your heart isn't though.
Not from a mentality standpoint.
Me either, man. I might have been in my younger years, but now I can't take it anymore. All right, let's make some picks. Sean,
let's do it.
Yep, I'll let you lead off since that was a really good Hideki pick.
Thank you very much. Sorry, I was taking a sip of tea. All right. So I, like I said, I struggled to find four names in this field that I really knew. So I'm out of my foursome right now. I'll start off with Mark Hubbard, as we've mentioned, brothers of Nathan Hubbard, who co-hosts the Fairway Rolling Pod with Joe House. My second in the foursome this week is Nikolai Højgaard. I've got the defending Mexico Open champion, Tony Finau, and Keith Mitchell. Don't ask why. He was a name that stood out that I at least recognize and
Fuck
remember.
You. Who's winning?
I got Tony repeating. Why not?
That's funny. Are we going to split the 3 points this week? 1.5, 1.5, because obviously I got Tony winning 2. clearly comfortable here, and Tony likes to win these easy tournaments, so I think that was an easy one.
It fits him very perfectly.
Yeah. Well, he's the our favorite 5 o'clock hitter. I got Keith Mitchell as well. I got JJ Spawn, and I got Harry Endicott. Shout out to Sea Island, Georgia. Lovely place.
There you go. You been? You frequent?
Not frequent, but it is up there for golf trips for me. Number one is my dream place to have a vacation house is Hilton Head.
Yeah, I know. That's
my spot.
Number one for you. Yeah,
that is my spot.
For sure. And a nice quick plane drive, plane flight down too. That's nice.
Yes.
Really, it wouldn't be that bad of a drive either. You can get there in a day.
Yeah, like 14, 15, I think. I don't know. I've never done it, and I don't plan to. I'm hoping I can fly private.
Yeah, the two-hour flight's easier. Maybe not even 2 hours. Might be an hour and a half.
It is, and I'm going to Charleston in about a week or two.
That's a bucket list place for me. I've never been and really want to. My parents were thinking of moving there before they moved to Florida.
Florida. Well, they live in the Cape, so it makes more sense to live in Florida because you really want to get, you know, the best of both worlds.
Oh, yeah, and exactly. They're part-time between the two, so.
Yeah, well, it must be nice. Can't wait. Hopefully I get there someday myself.
Yeah, I'm trying to take a page out of the old man's playbook, that's for sure.
That's for sure. What'd you do this weekend? Anything good?
I had a busy fucking weekend, man. I had a friend from Richfield come down, stayed with another friend of ours, but had to see him, hadn't seen him in a long time. Him and his girl came down Saturday, watched the UConn game with a couple friends, and then hit some bars outdoors afterwards. And then yesterday had
any boys or girls of the night, or you know, I've said this before, I don't judge you, Sean.
Right? No, I know, I understand that. listen, I keep my private business.
I love that for you.
Yeah, and listen, I don't need to pontificate to you or anybody else.
Yeah, we already know you and Frenchie, so you know. Now I'm glad you decided to keep it private now.
Yeah, listen, everybody knows that was a very intimate relationship. No, and then yesterday a couple friends ran the Austin Marathon. So
it was fun round trip.
Fuck no. Are you out of your mind? I don't want to run a 5K. You want me to run 23 more miles? Fuck out of here.
Well, I'm glad that they hold that thing in February in the Texas heat.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually kind of chilly yesterday. It was windy. It was in, like, the low 40s.
Oh, I'm so sorry. So sorry to hear that. Don't feel bad at all.
No, why should you? But it was, you know, last year, I think it was in the 70s. Don't worry, we're going to be just fine by the middle of this week. But it was a busy weekend, man. Very social weekend. Was out and about a lot. So it was not much rest, but it was nice. It was nice to be out and see a bunch of people and all that good shit. So what about you? What'd you get into?
Little new couples crew, I guess. So shout out to all of them. And we went to one of Michaela's friends' house as a house in LBI, and we went to like a cooking class down there. And then the girl Katie's husband, Anthony, has a truck, so we drove it on the beach, which was pretty badass.
Now, are these your friends originally? Are they Michaela's friends, or have you guys just kind of like...
No, they're Michaela's friends originally, and then I'm just, you know me, man.
Yeah.
I'm the best.
Of course. No, you're the life of every party you've ever been at.
That's a fact.
All right, let's recap some Curb. Episode 2, I know episode 3 dropped last night. We'll recap that later in the week. But Tom, the lawn jockey, there were some just super cringy moments, and I loved every second of them. What stood out to you from this episode?
I mean, obviously, the lawn jockey was a tough one. Absolutely hilarious. But for me, I just sit there watching the show like, how in the world do these people come up with this shit? Like, it's so...
Do you have one that's a little darker? That killed me.
Yeah. Oh my god. And it's just like, who comes up with this shit with the South African guy and the trip to Atlanta out of nowhere, like, and then just incorporating like something that would happen in Atlanta with
when
the jockey.
When the jockey was out in New Zealand, he's like, we need to get rid of this. I can't be walking past. I'm like, oh no, this is not gonna be good.
And you know, I don't understand how Susie just hasn't pop a blood vessel during some of these episodes. I wonder how many takes she has to do where she's just screaming at the top of her lungs.
You sick Fucks, go fix this. She's great. I mean, like, just, you know, the idea of getting the two gifts and then she sees them on the web, on the camera, taking, yeah, returning the second gift because she liked the shades. So it's so perfect.
They finally played the music. You know, the music that they didn't play it last season. Whenever somebody was lying, they would play that like flute or whatever. They finally played it again. Yeah. I was been waiting for that for years.
I like the suspenseful music that plays when Susie's about to lose it.
And that's a good one too.
Cutting loose on them. I mean, just the hair dye and the you see it, the it's just peeling off during the heat.
The show is still, comedy wise, it's still obviously in the top five probably for me of all time, but it really isn't the same without Marty.
No.
Funk Man. I miss him. And can we get Vin Diesel back on then? If we're not going to have, you know, if we can't have Super Dave, RIP, can we get what was his name in the fucking show?
Did you say Vin Diesel?
Vin Diesel. Yeah. He was Funkhauser's cousin or something.
I think you're talking about Vince Vaughn.
Vin Diesel's, yeah.
Vin Diesel's the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, the short guy. Yeah, Vin Diesel Vaughn. Doesn't, my bad. I'm sorry, Vince Vaughn.
Oh, I wanted to let you have a second chance to.
No,
to
I appreciate you trying.
I really did. I was like, Vin Diesel. And then
listen,
like,
you,
yeah,
think I'm bad,
I'm
with
like,
sports names? People that have listened to this pod for 377 episodes clearly know I know what the fuck I'm talking about when I talk about sports, and I still get those people's names wrong, and I don't even know about movies.
I love that you can get Vince Vaughn and Vin Diesel confused. You couldn't have two more polar opposite human beings.
That's true, but both of their names are full names are Vincent, I think.
Sure. Yeah, okay. The first syllable is Vin. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Vince Vaughn, well, I kind of expect him to come back. I expect there to be him to, you know, come out in one of these episodes. And I know Richard Lewis is, I believe, in episode 3. So we'll have to recap that.
Well, I'll let you know in about 15, 20 minutes.
There you go. So far, so good. What are your thoughts on the first two episodes of this final season?
I'm just enjoying them. I mean, I think they're, whatever he puts out is gold to me. He can do no wrong. So I'm just enjoying them. Again, the show is still amazing. It's just, it's nobody's fault. It's just never going to be the same.
No. And you know, he's just, there's still one to probably three or four moments in a 35-minute episode where I'm just like, oh fuck no, he's going to do this, isn't he? And he does. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's amazing.
It is. All right, everybody. We'll be back later in the week, unless you got something else, Sean.
Nah, man. That's all I got. It's a Monday. Let's conquer the hell out of this week, brother.
Yes, sir.